Joining me today is David K. Johnston. Thank you so much for joining us, David. As always, how are you?
Glad to be with you.
Now, you've said on this show a number of times over the last sort of few weeks that you think sort of Donald Trump is a con man. Now, this morning from the Trump camp, we've got a few conflicting narratives. One is from the president kind of extending his pause on striking Iran's energy facilities for an additional 10 days. The other one is reports that the US is planning to send 10,000 additional troops to the region. Where do you think the truth lies between those two things?
Well, I think Donald has no idea what he's gotten into. It's important to understand that Donald, who, by the way, I've been calling a con artist since 1988, has no knowledge of anything. It's all bluster. If you ask Donald, can you explain the significance to U.S. national security of the schism in Islam between Sunni and Shia, which is 1,401 years old? Donald would start talking about the drapes in the Oval Office. He has no idea what he's doing. And so I think there's a fairly good chance he will launch a ground assault of some kind, perhaps only to take Karg Island, which has been rejected in the past as an idea by presidents as when they were commander in chief, because what you end up is being sitting ducks for drones and missiles, protecting now useless, at least for the moment, oil transfer facility. But Trump has got himself in a pickle. His ratings are falling dramatically. There's a Fox News poll, and Fox does very good polling, showing 62% disapproval of what he's doing in Iran and 59%, I think, disapproval overall. And that's generally where the polls are going. Biden in his worst days was not that low. Ditto George W. Bush and Bill Clinton. So Trump's trying to figure out, how do I get out of this? And what about my MAGA base, who I promised no more endless foreign wars, and said, if you elect the other person, they're going to get in a war with Iran. And here we are.
Yes, I saw that poll earlier this week. Now, we've been doing, obviously, as we normally do, regular shows every day this week. And there's been a lot of whispers that that original pause that we saw, that five-day pause, was going to wait until today, which is Friday, before that operation perhaps took place. We now know it's going to be at least another 10 days. You sort of touched on it there. I mean, what are they waiting for?
Well, while the 82nd Airborne can go anywhere in the world within less than 24 hours, the troops that are being sent from Japan, those are Marines for ground assault, amphibious assault troops, they're going to need about 20 days to get there by boat. If you're going to invade, let's not forget the Powell Doctrine from more than 30 years ago. Colin Powell, who'd been chairman of the Joint Chiefs and who was Secretary of State later, said that if you need to have a purpose for war, you need to have allies in that war, and then you need to have overwhelming international force. Trump doesn't have any allies. Nobody is going along with him on this war. The Scandinavians and the Germans have been particularly contemptuous of Trump's efforts after, you know, he's gone out of his way to insult them all. So Trump is at this point, I think, simply trying to figure out what's the path that will build his power. Because remember, Donald Trump, by his own declaration, is an American dictator. And he is consolidating his power. He hasn't fully done so, but he is actively working to consolidate his power and end American democracy completely. And he's ill-equipped to do that except for his ego and his belief that, you know, he's special. And as he told The Atlantic magazine a year ago, I run the country and the whole world.
If they do go ahead with this operation, if we do finally see it, can we discuss the war aims and the war objectives a little bit? Because if we go back to 4 weeks ago when those first strikes came, what we were hearing was, you know, it was all about regime change. Then the US started to talk about taking out the nuclear capabilities, which some people might argue were already gone anyway. Now, I don't know, publicly, it almost seems to me like the objective now is to reopen the Strait of Hormuz, which, of course, was already open.
Well, I think the principal objective is figuring out how to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. That's every fifth barrel of oil in the world flows through there. There's LNG that flows through there. That's hurting the Qataris, who are a close American ally and where the U.S. has its most important base in that part of the world. But Trump didn't begin with a clear vision of where this was going to go. And regime change seems highly unlikely. Well, I think the regime is not stable, as shown by the demonstrations that continued even after massacres of Iranian citizens. If you want to overthrow a regime, you have to get to people on the inside, communications geared. You have to be talking to them. Instead, many of those people have been turned back into Iranian patriots. They may hate the Ayatollahs, but they don't want the U.S. telling them how to run their lives. It's a lesson we should have learned in Vietnam, if not sooner. So what Trump's trying to do now is delay and delay what are going to be hard decisions about what do we do. I won't be surprised if at some point he simply declares victory. But keep this in mind militarily. The Iranians are fighting the war they've prepared for decades. They're not fighting the war Donald Trump wants to bring. And so this is asymmetric warfare, and the Iranians right now are much more in charge than the Americans and the Israelis.
Do you think it is most likely, say they do manage to reopen the Strait of Hormuz, the U.S. would then declare victory right then?
Oh, I think if some way can be found to assure the safe passage of oil tankers and LNG ships, which, of course, can explode with nearly nuclear force, yes, I expect Donald would declare victory, whether that's true or not. Remember, domestically, he's got problems tied to this. He promised the price of gasoline would fall to $2 a gallon. The national average is now double that, and it's rising, and there are a few places where it's $6 or $7. Diesel fuel is $5 to $7, depending on where you are. There is tremendous economic harm going on in the U.S. from the tariffs and now the war in Iran. And let me be clear. The undeclared, unconstitutional war, only the American Congress has the power to declare that the U.S. is in a state of war.
Okay, so let's go with that and say that it does reopen and he sort of gets his off ramp. I guess there's another issue starting to emerge that perhaps the U.S. and Israel have different war aims.
Well, the Israelis are very clear about where they're going, at least the Netanyahu administration. I mean, you can find videos of Netanyahu when neither of us had gray hair, where although he speaks in very carefully calibrated terms, his animus to Palestinians and to Iranians is unmistakable. And he has long held this ambition of getting rid of people he doesn't like. And one of the problems for the U.S. is that all of the Middle East outside of Israel are dictatorships. The principal difference is that most of them are Sunni dictatorships, or at least nominally Sunni. People like MBS are not really religious, whereas the Ayatollahs are very clearly deeply religious. And who gets to lead the government is, well, the Iranian guard is crucial. You have to also be acceptable on the basis of your religious education and your public religious statements. And so, yes, we have very different interests here. And you cannot completely eliminate somebody you disagree with. You can subjugate them, but you can't eliminate them. And Netanyahu seems absolutely determined in the case of Gaza to eliminate Palestinians. And in the case of Iran, to eliminate any threat to Israel. Now, there's no question Israel feels threatened. Ordinary Israelis feel threatened. But nuclear weapons are defensive weapons. They are not offensive weapons. If the Iranians were able to build a bomb and had the missiles to deliver it and bombed Israel, they would be wiped out. And they know that. The Ukrainians would not have been invaded by Russia if they had not given up their nuclear weapons and turned them over to the Kremlin. So there's also a fundamental basic misunderstanding of the nature of nuclear weapons that Trump just doesn't have, even though he claims to be the world's greatest expert on nuclear weapons.
Do we not then in that scenario get back to the same point we're in at the moment? I mean, you could argue that there may have been sort of regime change, as in the regime has changed slightly in Iran. But to get actual regime change, if you look at Iraq, I think, you know, there was hundreds of thousands of troops that went. At the moment, you know, we've seen a tenth of that at best.
Yeah, you're not going to impose democracy, first of all, on people who don't have a tradition of it. Iran is a nominal democracy, but you're not going to put in new leadership without doing all the support work around and behind it. And the Iranians who took part in the 79 revolution against the Shah and his secret police, the Savak, who the U.S. and the British and the French put in power in the early 1950s, they don't want to go back to another ugly regime that's just led by a different person. But those are internal problems for Iran. Iran is the most sophisticated country in the Middle East. It has the deepest traditions of education and culture and philosophy. And what the West has managed to do is completely destroy what should be a natural relationship between Washington, London, Paris, Berlin with the Iranians. I don't know how we get out of this, but I do know that 1,000 years of enmity between Russian peoples and the Persian peoples has been turned into at least a working friendship, in which, by the way, it's very clear at this point that the Russians are providing intelligence to the Iranians on how to kill American servicemen. And Donald Trump goes, what? What? I haven't heard that.
Well, there are, I don't know if you've seen these, there are some reports that the man to get the U.S. out of this might be none other than J.D. Vance. Have you seen the reports that I think the Iranians are really reticent to negotiate with Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner, but are more than happy to do with Vance because, you know, he's been quite quiet on this whole thing. And perhaps privately, he might not think it's such a good idea.
Yeah, J.D. Vance is a smart man with an excellent education who has no moral principles whatsoever. And I think what you're seeing here is Donald Trump hanging Vance out to dry so that he can blame anything. Remember, Donald never takes responsibility for failures. He's admitted to a single failure in the almost 40 years I've known and covered him. And that was, he said, I never should have left the White House in 2021, which tells you his dictatorial aims. I think what he's doing here is setting up J.D. Vance so he can blame him if things go badly, because that's what Donald does. I've documented this in my books about Trump and thousands of columns and articles over the last 38 years.
So you don't put any kind of weight on him as a possible peacemaker in these talks?
No, and think about this for a moment from the point of view of the Iranians. They're meeting in Geneva with Witkoff, a real estate guy, and Jared Kushner, who's part of the Trump-Kushner crime family. And these guys know nothing about these issues whatsoever. The Iranians tell the Trump side through the foreign minister of Oman, who is the intermediary, hey, look, we'll give you inspection. We'll promise not to develop nuclear weapons, which they've always promised, by the way, whether you believe them or not. And we're going to set this up so that you can have American oil companies come into our country to develop our oil resources. That gives you a better deal than Barack Obama got. And you can walk out and say, look, I'm a better negotiator than Barack Obama. And less than 24 hours later, we bomb them. So from their perspective, why should they think anything except the Trump people, at least, if not Americans overall, are completely untrustworthy and they are savages. They have no sense of civilization and responsibility. I don't want to, and I don't think any of us want to live in the 9th century version of Islam that the Ayatollahs are seeking and trying to impose. 9th century is very important in the development of Islam. But on the other hand, they are sophisticated people. They are educated people. And they're dealing with a man who is just a complete fraud. He doesn't know anything. He doesn't know what to do. And, you know, we know that his presidential daily brief is basically a cartoon video of bombs blowing things up, interspersed with pictures of him, because he's a malignant narcissist.
Sticking with that religious theme, you mentioned 9th century Islam there. Have you been following the conversations around some of the MAGA fringes of Christian nationalism? You sort of see this as a holy war, because I just want to read you, I'm sure you've already seen this, I just want to read you a quote from Pete Hegseth. He was delivering his prayer service at the Pentagon. He's been kind of organizing these Christian worships at the Department of Defense since last year, and he said to a sort of crowd of people, I've seen the video, let every round find its mark against the enemies of righteousness and our great nation. Give them wisdom in every decision, endurance for the trial ahead, unbreakable unity, and overwhelming violence of action against those who deserve no mercy. I'm from the UK. It's a different country. But reading that, I found it was kind of extraordinary.
Well, you know, you can have an official religion as the British do, and it doesn't necessarily produce bad results, at least in the current era that we're in. But the United States was founded explicitly on the idea that we are not religious. The U.S. Constitution has a provision in the main Constitution, not in the amendments, that no religious test shall ever be applied. Pete Hegseth, who was a low-level officer in the military, has no understanding of this. He is a believer in this idea that God appointed Donald Trump. And America is full of imagery. I've collected maybe 100 different versions of God anointing Donald Trump. You can see these videos of pastors laying hands on him. He's the most irreligious man you can possibly imagine. And some of these pastors will tell you, well, yes, but you know, it was God who put Hitler in power and Pol Pot and Stalin because we don't know God's plan. And if you buy that, I can sell you anything. I'll sell you the Brooklyn Bridge for everything you've got. And Pete Hegseth here is trying to make America into a sectarian country with his brand of Christianity. That's what a lot of the MAGA want. The evangelicals in America who call themselves Christians but spout deeply anti-Christian statements. They want revenge, which the first the New Testament explicitly, totally rejects. And this is a real problem, but it will not sit with most Americans.
No, well, that's what most people, I think, would say and accept, that this idea of Christian nationalism and this as being a holy war is something confined to the fringes.
Right. It is widespread. I've jousted with high school classmates of mine, and I graduated from high school in 1967, who, you know, say, no, this is a Christian nation and all the Jews should be expelled from the country and black people should be sent back to Africa, and hold views that are completely out of line with the law, the Constitution, tradition. But, you know, we have in the White House a man whose presidency is about only one thing. It's about him.
You say it's only about him. How much power and influence does Hegseth have on this whole kind of operation? Because earlier this week, I think Trump said publicly, I've seen the video, I think he was in a briefing. He was talking about the war and talking about Pete Hegseth. And he said, you said, let's do it because you can't let them have a nuclear weapon. Now, you've already said in this conversation that Donald Trump perhaps likes to pass the buck onto other people.
Yeah, Donald will throw anybody, with the possible exception of his daughter Ivanka, under the bus for himself. He'll throw Melania under the bus if that becomes necessary, because Donald has no connection to you as a human being. You're either an object to be used for his benefit or an obstacle to be somehow oppressed and gotten out of the way. And so in some ways, yes, he's setting up Hegseth as well. But Donald is always influenced by the last person to speak to him. I mean, I've had a number of occasions where I was seeing Donald, and the next thing that comes out about Donald later in the day comes right out of our conversation. It's just the nature of who he is. Here, he clearly, Netanyahu, when he flew over for the umpteenth time to Washington just ahead of these attacks, was persuaded by Netanyahu, and I'm sure Hegseth, to go do this. I'm also sure there were a lot of generals and admirals who said, this is not a smart plan. You don't have the things in war. Remember the Powell Doctrine, et cetera, et cetera. And they were not listened to because, of course, no one knows more than Donald.
Do you think that Trump and his team do have the midterms playing in the back of their minds at all? Or are they not thinking about that?
Oh, Donald Trump is thinking very, very much about the midterms. And it's been 27 in a row, I believe, Democrats replacing Republicans in by-elections, some of them congressional, some of them state legislatures. The state legislative district that includes Mar-a-Lago in Florida, which Donald won by about 12 points in the fall of 24, just elected a Democrat by a margin of 2.2 percentage points. That screams that Donald's own neighbors, the super wealthy who live in the island that Mar-a-Lago is on in Palm Beach, have turned against him in large numbers. And the mood of the country is very clear. And if Trump loses either chamber, he's almost certain to lose the House. It will unleash investigations, subpoenas, all sorts of efforts. There are documents in the Epstein files, which weigh very heavily on Trump, that don't have to be obtained from the Justice Department. There are other places that have some of these. And that's the biggest fear Donald has. If, in fact, Donald Trump is guilty of what he's accused of, he says it's a hoax, I did nothing wrong. The question to ask is, if you did nothing wrong and you're afraid of absolutely nothing, why are you fighting so hard to keep millions of pages of documents? It turns out that we thought there were 6 million pages. There's a lot more than that. But why are you fighting so hard to keep these secret if they exonerate you? And of course, his argument, we have already been exonerated. Well, no, you haven't been exonerated.
And just finally, for anyone looking for a swift end to the war in Iran, is it not just important? Is it not a fact to suggest that the US has far more pain than it can take than perhaps, you know, me coming from the UK or other people in Europe?
Well, people in Europe are going to suffer next winter if they cannot restore LNG. I mean, right now it's warming, not so bad if the LNG, liquefied natural gas, is limited, but you have to fill up those storage during the summer and fall, and there'll be a lot of pain. The lack of urea fertilizers is going to cause pain all over the world. It's not going to mean there isn't any, but there'll be less. And this is where the Iranians are in control of what's going on here. The Iranians have no interest whatsoever in bowing down to Donald Trump. They want to humiliate him. They want to humiliate the West. I mean, after all, what do they call the U.S.? The great Satan. And so this is a theocracy. It's a theocracy that's has a military arm, just like the popes in the 800,000 year ago range, who were out literally waging war, putting on armor. The same thing is going on here inside Iran. And as long as Iran can humiliate the West, they're going to continue to do so. I don't think Trump will cry uncle. So at some point, Trump may decide he has to engage in a land invasion. And if he does it the way it looks at the moment, 10,000 troops, that's going to turn out very badly. Iran, remember, fought an 8-year war with the Iraqis. 8 years, and they have 1 million trained soldiers, not all on active duty, but 1 million trained soldiers. So a land invasion, very, very problematic, especially without allies.
David, we always appreciate your time. Thank you for joining the Trump Report.
Thank you.